Would you like to accelerate your career and reach your full potential in just minutes a day? Welcome to the LeadX Show with New York Times bestselling author and Inc. 500 entrepreneur, Kevin Cruz.
Hello, everyone. Kevin Cruz here. Welcome to the LeadX Show, where we're on a mission to spark intentional leadership in 100 million people over the next 10 years. And if you want to stand out and get ahead as a leader, as a manager, as a high potential, a hypo, at work, visit the website leadx.org. Check out our daily free training videos and check out the dozens of world-class online learning programs in the LeadX Academy. Again, that's leadx, LEADX.org. Today on the show, I talked to an amazing nonprofit leader about her failure to success story from the slums of Cape Town, the secret to great relationships, and her challenge of the day, which is for us to each time we feel emotionally triggered, to pause long enough to take three breaths. First, our quote of the day is, "The way we talk to our children becomes their inner voice," author Peggy O'Mara. And if you truly believe that, the way we talk to our children becomes their inner voice, this will change the way you talk to your children. Our guest today is the founder and president of Global Grassroots, an international organization that leads a social venture incubator and mindful leadership program for women and girls in East Africa. Among many other awards, our guest has been named a CNN Hero in Haiti for her work after the devastating earthquake in 2010. Her new book is Leading from Within: Conscious Social Change and Mindfulness for Social Innovation. Our guest is Gretchen Steidel. Gretchen, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
So I'm looking forward to talking about your new book in just a minute, but I have a tradition on the LeadX Show where I always start with the same first question, because I think our failures are always just stepping stones to something else, even if we don't know what that something else is going to be. So tell me a story about one of your best failures, and what did you learn from it?
I agree. I think there's always something to learn from failure. So when I got out of business school, I really wanted to begin work in the world making some sort of difference. And I was coming from this very top-down approach, thinking that we really just needed more corporate investment in the great ideas of social entrepreneurs around the world, and where could I kind of make a case where that was going to be most important. And I thought, I'll go to South Africa, I'll understand the HIV/AIDS crisis, and I'll try to get more corporate investment in solving this problem. And at the time that I went there in 2004, the HIV/AIDS pandemic was at such a height that some of these companies were hiring three workers for the same job because two of them would die by the end of the year. So there was a real reason why they should care. But as I made my rounds to these executive boardrooms, I found time and time again, there were these programs that looked good on paper and certainly were great in social marketing purposes, but they were in many cases totally ineffective. Companies were, you know, patting themselves on the back for having programs offering free testing and drugs, but they didn't seem to notice that not many people were even participating because of the stigma. And so one day someone asked me, you know, have you ever actually talked to somebody with HIV, maybe someone suffering from this disease in the townships? And these are the slums that surround some of the major cities. And I hadn't. I didn't know how to do work on the grassroots level. I knew how to go to the top. And so they offered to bring me into the one of these townships outside of Cape Town to talk to a young woman in her early 20s who was addressing the HIV/AIDS crisis, to talk with her and some of her friends who were suffering from full-blown AIDS. And as I sat there in her shack, this two-room metal shack, and she was talking to me about the intricacies of HIV/AIDS and the sexual violence crisis that was wrapped up in the spread of HIV, I realized that here were the experts, women who knew exactly what to do to protect themselves from HIV/AIDS, but they had the economic vulnerability and a lack of sexual rights and freedom that made them susceptible And yet this woman, her name was Zuleka Natuli. She was not formally employed. She had no real education. She barely had some coins to spare. She'd figured out how to make money making beaded products, to bring together a group of women and men to combat this issue of sexual violence in her community. And she was, in very innovative and effective ways, making real change happen. And in that moment, I realized that I had completely missed where change was really happening by trying to go sort of from a top-down approach, that what I really needed to do was to listen, to go into these grassroots communities and listen to the women who in so many ways are deeply impacted by these crises and know exactly what to do to fix them, but have the least access to the resources and training to do it. And so in that moment, I scrapped my entire, you know, new endeavor that I was doing and dedicated myself to supporting the ideas and solutions of grassroots women around the world. And that was what started Global Grassroots from my complete ignorance and mistake about what was going to make change happen.
I mean, and this really was, I mean, a great failure. It sounds funny to say that, but you know, you went in with one set of assumptions and it completely flipped around and led literally to the founding and the naming of your organization, all about being grassroots.
Exactly. Exactly. And you have to be able to listen to know when, and to step down from your own agenda to know when to change gears.
Right. Right. And in the beginning of the show, I shared your remarkable career and your bio, and you've been involved in so many different things. And what advice would you give to a young person today, someone who wants to have an amazing career that's both varied and impactful? What would you say to someone?
Well, I feel like, you know, thriving in your career is about, and success is not, shouldn't be looked at just in conventional terms, but really about making a meaningful contribution, whether that's to your organization or to a broader cause, and feeling challenged to grow and learn. And to do that, for me, there's been sort of five things that have been really important. One is identifying your passion, and that might be the type of work you're doing, a cause, a place, a population you want to work with, and figure out ways to leverage it in service to the greater good. You know, create that personal mission statement for yourself, because that's going to bring you meaning. The second thing is to invest in your self-awareness and bring the same quality of attention to your relationships. The more that you let your ego get out of the way and consider any difficult experiences that you have, where you're challenged or where you have conflict or where you have failure, as actual intelligence for you, the more you are going to improve the way in which you know yourself and relate to others. The third is to invest in your own well-being, because especially in my industry, there's so much self-sacrifice and to the point where we burn out really quickly. And it's really important to know what nourishes you in terms of, you know, your mind, your emotional well-being, your physical health and spirit, and invest in those things. Set boundaries, ask for what you need, and then listen to yourself and trust your guidance. And then fourth, you know, find a mentor who's been through similar experiences and stay connected. It's really important to reach out and stay in terms of staying connected. I've had a lot of people ask my advice, but then I never know whatever happened to what they with that advice. So stay connected, follow up, let them know how they've helped you. And as you progress in your career, offer similar support to others who are following behind you. But my number one piece of advice to everyone, and this sounds really simple, but it's sort of core to my philosophy that I've, you know, written this book about, and that is part of Global Grassroots work. And it's about mindfulness. It's taking a single breath. If we could just take a single breath before we click send on that email or that tweet, or before we act, there's so much that would actually happen differently than when we're reactive. So take a deep breath is the first step.
Yeah, it's creating that space between thought and action and not just reacting instantly to everything.
Very well said. Exactly.
And incredible career advice. And I do recognize some overlap with what your new book is all about. So this is a great segue. And again, your new book is Leading from Within, Conscious Social Change and Mindfulness for Social Innovation. You talk about the five capacities. You've just sort of touched on a couple of them briefly here, but let's start. So what's the big idea of the book?
So what I call conscious social change is actually a design methodology. I guess what I'm trying to convey to the world is that mindfulness, which is now more and more in the mainstream,
right,
this process of kind of developing your self-awareness and being able to be more present every day, that goes beyond our own well-being, our sense of calm, or helping ourselves protect ourselves from burnout. Mindfulness is actually a design tool that we should be using in the way that we solve problems. Whether you're doing that as a social entrepreneur, creating some new thing to address some of these intractable issues around the world, or you're doing this within your organization or your community, or even within any sort of relationships, mindfulness is a form of brain training, and it actually makes us better able to manage our relationships, communicate, for example, with less and handle conflict with that less anger. It reduces stress. It allows us to have more positive emotions. And there's real benefits to the self, but it also helps us understand problems in a new way. The way we diagnose issues, the way we listen to people, the way we drop our ego and our agenda to really understand what's working, what's not working, and what people need, so that we, instead of sort of imposing ourselves or demonizing our opposition and creating more divisive tactics just to win, which we see all the time in politics, we actually look at being more inclusive, more responsive, and more collaborative, so that at the end of the day, the kind of solutions we result in are more sustainable, because it involves everyone's input and ownership. And that results in longer term real transformation.
Okay, this is a curveball question, not one that you probably were prepped for, but you really punched some, triggering buttons here, because you're right. Like, what frustrates me is you talk about it's so common to think divisively and to demonize the opposition. And I have studied a lot and think a lot about persuasion. Mm-hmm. And one of the easiest, most powerful ways you can persuade someone is to sort of agree with them that they have this enemy out there, and the enemy is a threat and a growing threat, and you must band together to fight these threats, right? Mm-hmm. And what frustrates me is it seems so easy to demonize our opposition and so hard to realize that the oneness of all of us together.
Yep.
And why is that? Like, what is your take? Because even evolutionarily speaking, biologically speaking, you would think if truth is oneness, is this mindfulness and understanding where we are alike rather than where we are different, you would think it would be easier to lean in that direction.
Right. Yes. I mean, it is, we have this innate interest in feeling like we belong.
Right.
And that started, way back on the playground. We wanted to belong. And it feels good to be validated in our viewpoint and to feel like we have a common experience. But when we then associate and affiliate with a limited self-interest group and demonize an enemy and or pursue our own interests at the expense of or the exclusion of another, it results in actually much less effective long-term change. And I think when we thrive on this sense of opposition or this competition to win, we are sabotaging our ability to understand each other and actually move towards greater progress and to realize that we are all connected, that there are all these similarities of human experience. What mindfulness does for us, as again, this is a form of brain training. Mindfulness as a definition is simply, paying attention to what's happening in this moment on purpose. And by doing that, we're training our brain to look at things in different ways. The more we start noticing ourselves, and this is not comfortable, we start recognizing our own patterns of behavior that might have previously been, we've been blind to, that could be how we react to stuff and, you know, the messiness of the way we relate to people. But the more we notice how we behave in under stress or in conflict, for example, the more then we have the power to change our behavior in and assumptions instead of letting us just operate on automatic pilot. And the more that we start to understand how we go through change, because, you know, we all want it, but it's hard. It's hard to adapt to things.
Right.
The more we go through that experience, the more we realize that others are having the same experience. Even if we don't have the same values or we don't see eye to eye, others are going through life having the same challenges with change. And we can bring a different level of human understanding of what that looks like and compassion to what's going on in their behavior. And then we're curious about it. The same curiosity we have for ourselves, we extend to others. The more we accept ourselves and our imperfections, the more we do that with others. And that leads us to see a different kind of belonging and connection and a way of working together to result in the kind of change or policy that benefits the majority or more people as opposed to just our particular side of the equation. And what we're going to see and what we keep seeing is this pendulum swing. You know,
right.
If we don't, you know, we get just enough votes to pass our thing. And then the next time someone else is in power, they want to reverse it. And that's not getting us anywhere.
Right. Every 4 to 8 years, it swings back the other direction. And you're suggesting, you know, it's only through that understanding and curiosity that we could possibly get to some long-term solutions for all of us.
Exactly. That benefit the most or that incorporate an understanding of broader needs so that everyone is participating in designing that kind of solution.
And, you know, your book is called Leading from Within, and that's also one of your chapters. And of course, this is the LeadX Leadership Show. You know, many of our listeners are young managers, young to mid-career leaders in various organizations. Tell me more about leading from within. What do you mean by that?
Well, I would say a conscious leader is someone who works very differently from the sort of conventional paradigm where we try to get people to comply with what we want with incentives or punitive measures, you know, telling or forcing people to change. A conscious leader who leads from within starts first, as I've just been describing, by understanding, you know, the circumstances around them and change from the inside out. And so as we come to understand ourselves with much greater clarity and self-awareness, we have deeper understanding and compassion for others. From there, we then engage with people and our relationships we build from a very different kind of awareness and quality. You know, the quality of attention defines the quality of our relationships. Mm. And so we too are able to connect with people more deeply. Leading from within also involves us finding and leveraging our own gifts and purpose that brings us meaning. And when we do that for ourselves, we are more likely to seek to support others in doing that for them too, rather than just seeking to find people to tend to our own agenda. And by doing so, we inspire people. We inspire people to step into their highest capacities and to contribute in ways that are meaningful to a common vision or a greater whole. And, you know, and conscious change leaders who lead from within, you know, come into their work with others with greater humility and greater curiosity and deeper listening skills than most of us do, and attempt to, you know, live with that kind of integrity and engagement with the world that is inner driven and is more other focused.
Love it. And I just want to underscore for our listeners, I mean, you said something I just scribbled down. It's pure gold. The quality of our attention determines the quality of our relationships. And I'm always reminding people that I feel, you know, we're leaders at work, we're leaders at home, we're leaders everywhere we go. And boy, that statement, quality of our attention determines the quality of our relationships, can apply in so many different areas. Gretchen, I like to challenge our listeners. I say, you know, don't try to transform yourself, your life all in one day. Try to get a little bit better on this never-ending journey. So can you give us something, you know, practical from your book or experience that, like, something that we could do today?
Yes. If everyone had, I'll give you two quick things.
Okay.
If everyone is able to start by giving themselves, like, instead of hitting a snooze button or instead of taking a coffee break, both are about 7 to 9 minutes long typically, and just take a moment to spend time in solitude, whether that's going for a walk or sitting on your own with your eyes closed and just watching your breath, just paying attention with awareness to how you breathe. That is the start of a mindfulness practice or meditation that will begin to train your brain to realize all of these many different kinds of benefits we've been talking about. And there's numerous apps, and I even have some guided meditations on my website, consciousocialchange.org, where you can find some practices to help guide you in this. That alone will get you started in this process of being a more mindful leader. The second thing is to take 3 breaths before you respond, especially in circumstances where you feel really triggered, you know, annoyed, frustrated, irritated, and your inclination is to react. And a very quick story of how that makes a major difference involves a woman I was working with in Rwanda who I taught the skill to. And when she came back to me at one point and she said, you know, the other day I went home and my kids had totally destroyed my home. And I was so angry. I usually just spank my children. But today I remembered what you said and I took 3 breaths and I realized I don't want to hit my kids. I just want them to clean up the house. So I was able to explain to them this, and they listened to me for the first time. And I was so profoundly transformed by this that it's made me think a lot more about the issue that I'm working on. So this woman was a social change agent working on domestic violence. And she realized in that moment how easy it is for our automatic patterns to actually perpetuate violence, that she had deeper compassion for how she was going to try to change other perpetrators of domestic violence. And she shifted her approach to not only working with couples, but working on parenting skills to so as to help raise the next generation without violence. So that single moment of taking 3 breaths in her personal life transformed the whole way that she was designing and going to work with other people in her domestic violence work in her community. That's all it takes is 3 breaths.
I love both pieces of very practical advice, very, very powerful. Not to minimize the story from the woman in Rwanda, but really to build on it. I was in an executive health program in Philadelphia a couple of years ago. And one of the things was me spending time with someone who'd been, you know, advanced training in mindfulness and meditation. And when she came in and we were talking and she was very, almost the stereotype, like she's very zenned out, almost like, almost monk-like. And she said in a soft voice, she says, "I can tell you're very calm and present, Kevin, but what do you find triggering? You know, when do you react without pausing?" And I said, "It's usually something with my kids." Mm-hmm. And then she just shook her head and says, "Yeah, my kids trigger me too."
It's so true. They're our biggest teachers, I think.
I think so.
Just one quick comment. You know, this is not, I'm not proposing that we all work to simply get to a place of no reaction or calm, although that you may get there. You know, sometimes it is necessary to channel anger in a way that's very potent and can raise attention. But if we do not pair that with mindfulness, we could create harm. So this is about using our presence and our capacity wisely and consciously to channel our energy in a way that and our decision making and our actions and choices and words more effectively, as opposed to letting it drive us.
Love it. And Gretchen, how can our listeners find out more about you and your work and your new book? And I know you have a couple of different websites you want to mention, right?
Sure. Well, Global Grassroots, my nonprofit that teaches this kind of work with change agents in Africa, is at globalgrassroots.org. And then I also have a personal website, consciousocialchange.org, where I have access to a link to my book and toolkit and a whole range of different courses and mindfulness videos for those who want to start learning what it's like to apply mindfulness to the way in which we create change or lead.
Fantastic. And we will put those links, of course, in the show notes and everywhere that this episode appears. Gretchen, thanks so much for coming on to the LeadX show.
Thank you. It was such a pleasure.
LeadX family, that wraps up another mentoring session packed with advice just for you. Before I go, I hope you'll remember that at LeadX, we're on a mission to give free leadership training and professional development to everyone, anywhere, at any time. Visit leadx.org to check out our free course of the day and our weekly live webinars. And if you're the kind of person who always says thank you, please take 1 minute to go leave a rating for the LeadX show on iTunes, because we're at 246 reviews and we need to get to 300. We get about 2 ratings a week, which is less than 1 per show. My heart is breaking. But big thanks to the new reviews from last month from Masahi, Annette's Guy, ZenTim69, Mike071966, Stacy H331, Kaplan and Carolina, Princess Rose Love, McGahee01, and Living with Intention. And of course, because leadership is influence and we are all leading all of the time, it's just a question of whether we're leading in a positive direction or a negative direction. How will you lead today?